Roger that, control. Sure was a beautiful sight.
Turn your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95BFM. Thanks to Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, Alice.
How are you going this morning?
Oh, pretty good, actually.
That's good to hear. That's very good to hear. So we're talking Matariki.
We are talking Matariki. I mean, each year I mention when we can see it, and looking forward to seeing Matariki in the morning sky each winter. But I haven't really talked much about Matariki itself very much, and I think I should this time, because there's been a couple of things in the news. One about, well, there's actually 9 stars, not 7, and more recently discussion about when the festival should be held, the Matariki Festival. So I thought I'd just sort of address those things a little bit. As far as the number of stars are involved, astronomically, that cluster of stars has about 1,000 stars. Okay, so the 7 stars, the 7 sisters, the ones that people talk about, are the ones that are visible to the naked eye. So
okay.
Good night with good eyesight, you can see 7 little stars close together. Where people get the idea of 9 from, I've really no idea. as far as we can tell, going back into prehistory, the stars haven't changed in brightness sufficiently to have had 9 visible to the naked eye, unless people had supervision back there, but we don't know that.
Okay, so we've cleared it up. You heard it here. 7
yep,
visible,
7 stars.
But there's actually 1,000.
Yeah, it's a cluster of stars that were formed about 100 million years ago out of a huge cloud of gas and dust. They're all formed around about the same time. But the ones we can see with the naked eye are just the brightest ones. They're much hotter than our sun. If our sun was at Matariki, we wouldn't be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, our sun's not bright enough. So the 7 stars you can see are really bright and very, very hot. The festival itself, though, is a matter of how it's celebrated and remembered, and that's a cultural issue. So that does vary up and down the country from iwi to iwi, and it's not my place to really go into that. The important thing astronomically for Matariki is it resets the calendar. So the traditional Maori calendar was based on the moon. So lunar calendar, as many other cultures have used the moon over thousands of years. The problem with using the moon is it doesn't divide evenly into the number of days in an actual year. So if you look at full moon and count the number of days till the next full moon, the actual number is 29 and a half days. That divided into the number of days in the year, 365, comes up about 11 days short. So if you just watch the moon phases, which is, there's a very good reason for doing that in a hunter-gatherer society, of course, knowing the tides, going to help you being with your fishing a lot and safety at the beach and all that sort of thing. So lunar calendar makes a lot of sense. But to match that to the seasons when you're planting crops, if you're 11 days short every year, eventually you're going to get so far out that you're planting crops at the wrong time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So to reset the calendar, the way the Maori do that is to wait till the beginning of June and look for Matariki coming up just before sunrise. Then the next new moon, start counting your months. Count your 12 months, you've got 11 days at the end of that period, wait for Matariki to come up, the next new moon, and off you go.
That makes so much sense. So it's kind of like a little fudget period to just get them back in line with the year.
Yeah, technically those days are called intercalated days. So other calendars have a similar sort of thing. They just don't use Matariki to actually do the resetting.
Cool.
So what the Maori utilize Matariki for, that star cluster, is at that time of the year, the beginning of June, it's rising just before the sun. You reset the calendar at that point and start counting your months from the next lunar cycle. So what we've done in our calendar is to take those 11 days and just spread them during the year.
Yeah.
And so we have 12 months every year, but we have absolutely no idea what the moon phase is.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter to us we'd go down and buy a fish from a fish shop and leave the moon phases to the fishermen, you know.
That's so interesting. Yeah, there's obviously all these different ways of telling time, and yeah, you know, we have our one that we're very set in, but it's by no means the only way.
Well, exactly. But what it does, though, the way we do it with leap years and so on, keeps our years in sync with the seasons, so
yeah,
it doesn't get out. The Maori did the same thing, except they used this 11-day period plus looking for Matariki to do it, instead of counting days just using observations of the sun.
Very cool. Thank you for explaining that, David.
Yeah.
I've learned something.
There is one little, as there is always in astronomy, that's the basics. It sounds complicated, but it gets complicated beyond that, because, in fact, the Earth spins on a tilt, which
yep,
is why we get the seasons, but that tilt doesn't stay still. That tilt moves. It wobbles, and it takes 26,000 years for that wobble to go around once, okay? What that means is that over a period of 26,000 years, what I just said goes through a whole cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So during that whole period, all the seasons are going to get out and then come back into sync again because the Earth's tilt wobbles around. So in 500 years' time, Matariki will be rising a whole week later.
Wow.
Okay, and 2,000 years will be rising a month later. So it's basically one star sign every couple of millennia. For the astrologers, that's important as well, obviously. So the Maori, if they're going to continue using this, would have to make an adjustment at some point because it's not going to work. And I guess if you also go back in time, they can't have used this way of doing things too far back in time because, again, it wouldn't have worked more than about 500 or so, certainly 1,000 years ago.
So
I'm afraid in astronomy you've got to keep on observing and taking things into account because the periods, of course, we're talking about are long.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So you're saying in the wider scheme of things it's relatively recent, like in the many, many years scheme of things.
Well, you're talking centuries.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't really go into the millennia. You've got to adjust the way you do it. You could still use Matariki, but the way you use it would have to change.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought I'd just mention that. I mean, Matariki's been known and used for many millennia. It's even, don't know if you know, remember those cave paintings in France, and you've got the bull and the cave painting there, that's 20,000 BC.
Wow.
Well, those bulls, they're pretty sure represent Taurus the bull, which, of course, Matariki is on the shoulder of the bull. So, you know, these constellations and what we see, they go back a huge amount of time.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to planets.
Okay, there's some announcement of planets being found by the Kepler Space Telescope. And people getting all excited about the possibility of 10 of them being about Earth size and in the habitable zone of their star. The thing to remember about Kepler is it's sent up to look at many, many stars. It was a statistics exercise. So finding the planets is really good. But the main purpose of that mission was to observe nearly 150,000 stars and then really observe that amount really, really well. And from that, extrapolate to, okay, what does that mean to the whole galaxy? To see the whole of the sky, they would have had to have 400 of those telescopes looking across the sky. So what they actually looked at was just a tiny part of it. So what's probably more important than what Kepler is discovering is the implications for the rest of the galaxy, not just the actual planets. That, I mean, what the planets that it's really found are absolutely amazing. I'm not taking anything away from that at all. But really it's extrapolating that beyond that little patch of sky to the rest of the sky that really is the important part. So they're making huge strides there, and everyone's looking forward next year to the launch of the James Webb Telescope that'll hopefully find even smaller planets closer to their stars.
Very cool. Okay, let's move on to SOFIA.
SOFIA is a plane. It's a plane with a telescope in it. SOFIA stands for the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. It comes to New Zealand most years. It usually works out of Christchurch, flies around down south of New Zealand, where the skies are really, really clear. It gets up to 10.5 kilometres at least in altitude, where it's above 99% of the water vapour, which blocks infrared light. And it's got a more than 2.5 metre diameter telescope aboard. What it is able to see is just amazing. And because they can change the equipment easily, it's much better in that sense than a space-based infrared telescope. This time down there, what they're going to be looking at that's really interesting is the next object that the New Horizons spacecraft's going to fly past. So you might remember New Horizons went past Pluto in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still going, and it's going to go past another object way out in the Kuiper Belt, which is like the asteroid belt, only even bigger, and will go past in January the 1st, 2019. So this mission, or one of the aims of this mission from this jet is to have a look at that object and get more information before the spacecraft gets there.
Cool.
So there might be some people who in New Zealand can go up on the jet. I know some went up last time. I know the Herald reporter went up. So it's pretty cool being on that jet with a huge telescope that just opens out the side of the plane and the plane doesn't fall out of the sky. It's pretty amazing.
Wow, I have to get my BFM media credentials
yes.
And see if they'll let me on. Sounds very cool. So you said it's come to New Zealand and it's flying down south. Does it sort of travel around and fly in from different places?
I think it's actually based out of Christchurch.
Okay.
Because it's a big plane, so it needs that airport. And then it does these loops down southeast of New Zealand. So it'll track down and make a big loop around, just making use of the clear skies down there. There's no planes and very little shipping and so on. So it's just an ideal place to be doing it. It's an NASA plane that's been going for quite a few years. And I think this might be at least the second version of the plane. So they've upgraded it in the past.
Very interesting. Okay, What about the night sky?
It's not changing a huge amount, I have to say. We've still got Jupiter and Saturn in the sky after sunset. In the west, Orion is completely gone, maybe just as boot is appearing above the horizon. But we've got the fishhook, Mare fishhook, or Scorpius, over in the east of really dominating the night sky from here. And the morning sky, we've got Venus, very, very bright, and of course, Matariki itself and Orion all over in the northeast. Mercury is too close to the sun to see at the moment. And poor old Mars, it's just the way things are aligned. It's been too close to the sun to look at for quite a while, and we actually won't be able to see it until about September. Mars has been in just the wrong place compared with the Earth and the sun for a period, so we've got to wait a bit longer to be able to see Mars.
Cool.
The main thing is to hope the cloud stays away, really.
Yeah, how's it been for the last little while? Pretty cloudy?
No, I mean, when it's been the front and bad weather, obviously you can't see anything. But what that does actually is it clears out the dust and so on, and so when it does clear up, it's really clear.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so it really sort of washes out all that dusty stuff high up, and they're not too bad. When it gets a bit colder, then we get ice crystals up high, so then it sort of starts getting bad again. But we've had these northerly weather systems, which I don't know if it's climate change, but it's not too bad for us.
So a clear night after a storm is a good time to go.
Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind. And what's going on at the Stardome?
Stardome, we've got the school holidays coming up in a few weeks. We'll be talking about dragons and dinosaurs, and I'll talk about that next time. In the meantime, we've got another week of Matariki Dawn, our nighttime show about the creation myth, about Matariki itself, and the story of Rona Amarama. That's at 7 p.m. Wednesday to Sunday. We've got a wonderful show called Super Volcanoes, which the title tells it all. It's not just super volcanoes on Earth, though, I have to say. There's volcanoes outside and elsewhere in the solar system. We'll also discuss that on Saturday and Sunday afternoons. And next month we've got a new one called Incoming, about asteroids and comets colliding with the planet through history.
Ooh, sounds exciting.
So we've got some interesting new shows, and Matariki Dawn to catch before it finishes at the end of the month.
Great. Well, nice talking to you, David, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Control, we are docked.
That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM. Thanks to Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.